Hi, welcome to the UCB Longform Conversation Podcast. I am John Frusciante.
Yeah, that's right. And I am Will Hines.
Mm-hmm. And here with us are our podcast intern, Cypher Sounds.
Hello.
And the intern's intern, Keaton Patty,
right.
Who, as opposed to normal, is on a mic this week. Hello, Keaton.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Wow. First, podcast collectors, remember this one is the first time Keaton Patty spoke on mic.
Once before.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
But now
he's sole possession of a mic.
Oh, yeah, that's
he
true.
He dropped a Gramps. That's right.
It's the first time he's on his own microphone. Yes. So you might want to download two copies of this podcast and keep one wrapped.
Yeah, like
keep one unopened.
Like a newspaper.
Yeah, yeah.
Mint condition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Signed by Todd McFarlane. That's an early 90s comic book reference.
Yep. Mm-hmm, I got it.
All right. Cypha, that's a comic book reference from the early 90s.
Got it.
Todd McFarlane. Do you know who Todd McFarlane is?
No.
He was like a big comics nerd,
mm-hmm.
or artist.
Yeah.
And a cult kind of surrounded him because of his art was very stylized in the late 80s, early 90s. And he would do people. That's when comics buying for the sake of reselling peaked. And he was like someone, or his stuff was, you'd get a Todd McFarlane Spider-Man and bag it and never open it because you try to resell it. And then he became a big comics collector. And then didn't he end up buying Mark McGuire's autographed baseball, wasn't
it? I don't know. Was that him?
He might have. I've heard that name, but
and
I don't know why.
I think
he made a lot of figures,
he made Spawn,
too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He broke away from the Marvel DC. I can't believe we're talking about this. He broke away from the Marvel DC thing and started Image Comics so the creators owned their properties so that when merchandising or movies took off, the creators benefited.
Oh, that's good.
So like Spider-Man gets big. The creators Marvel. Of Spider-Man, Steve Ditko, doesn't make any money. Marvel makes money.
Right.
But stuff at Image, like Spawn, becomes big. The guy who made it, Todd McFarlane, makes money.
Right.
Or Rob Liefeld's
owns it, or completely, or a piece of it?
A lot of it, if not all of it. I think it was a creator-driven
thing. So then how does the guy who owns a company make money?
They don't. It was a collective of artists.
Oh,
a collection of artists who did a company just so they could make their stuff.
So how was their business savvy?
They died. The business went out of,
You need a businessman in there.
Yeah. They did all right, though, for a while.
Someone's got to do the numbers.
I know. They didn't have anybody. So why am I talking about this?
Because we were talking about this being collector's edition.
So Keaton, this podcast. Could be the beginning of Keaton becoming like the Todd McFarlane of improv podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so.
We let this little genie out of the bottle, and pretty soon he owns everything.
And that is your nickname, right? Little genie?
Little genie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'll remember you guys.
Well, today we're pulling what I call the nuclear option, which is our lack of planning and circumstances beyond our control have left us to do something that I've pushed for some time, but we haven't been able to do, which is that the hosts are the guests, or in particular, John Frusciante, you're going to be the guest.
Yeah,
tonight.
Yeah.
Because we had a couple of good guests, but then like scheduling and stuff got weird and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
And rather than skip an episode, we're just gonna interview you.
Ben Remakis said that he did not want to do the podcast.
Okay, I didn't want to out him, but yeah,
he did want to do it. And then he said, and I'm quoting words from his email.
Yes.
I not want.
Okay.
Do.
I'm sensing ellipses.
Podcast.
Okay. I'm sensing a misleading series of
those
ellipses.
Are all words that are in the email that he sent.
Okay.
In that order.
Look, let's not get into the semantics of it. Okay.
They're in the email.
Those words are in the email that he
didn't
sent
want
to
do it.
Me.
Yeah. So.
But
yeah,
so,
Ben was going to be the guest. Then for like things got a little messed up.
He'll
so
be here next week, hopefully.
Yeah. He'll sometime.
Yeah.
So we're going to – this is something that I want to do, which is interview you, John. So we're just going to do that. You're the guest.
Mm-hmm.
Keaton and Cypher on the mics. I might throw to you guys for some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Please do.
And you're interesting for a lot of reasons, not least of all, which is your hair is weird.
Yeah, that's the most interesting thing about
me. You've got a real pronounced, big kind of a curly Jufro sort of situation happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Garlock last week also had a big – this is sort of an Electric Light Orchestra themed series of guests. Where you look like kind of late 70s white soul dudes.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's been a curse for my entire life, but it drives my creativity.
Yeah. you're interesting to me because you've been around the scene for a long time.
40 years.
40 years. That's right. Yeah. A real long time. Since 1970, you started doing stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you have been. You've been. I think in 2000 you started showing up.
Yes.
And you did a bunch of stuff. Got really involved. Went away, and then sort of had to fight your way back in.
Yeah,
and
true.
So that is interesting. in addition to your just general improv style, it's kind of interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Let's get into all that and rip you apart and compartmentalize you for the sake of an interesting.
That's
discussion.
All I've ever wanted in my life. And Great. Let me also say thank you so much for having me. It's been my dream to be on this podcast for a while.
I was pushing for you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. So,
well, let's get a. I think let's just do a kind of a broad overview here of because I think what's one of the things interesting is that you're one of these guys who's been at the UCB New York scene, you know, not since not long after it started.
Yeah.
So I think 2000 is when you kind of entered the scene.
I think so.
You're probably watching shows in '99.
Yeah.
And then started taking classes in 2000, and you were young then.
Well, sort of. I started taking classes and seeing shows in '99. And then, I think, 99 or 2000.
I'm actually almost positive you started in 2000. Because I started November of 99, and I think you were like 4 months later.
Maybe.
And it's not just so I can establish seniority. I orient it this way because we were in a level four together.
I feel like it might have been 99, though. I don't know.
Who was your first teacher?
Ali Farinakian was my
level
101
one
teacher.
Definitely 2000, level one because he came like in December of '99.
Okay. All right.
oh, smoked him.
What was big on the radio when you first took the class?
John. Oh, really? You don't remember that?
Why do I not remember that?
Because he was too busy buying things from 6 years ago that were like in weird.
Things were kind of fuzzy. Things were kind of fuzzy for me back then. I'm trying to remember like what I would listen to driving
you know
in from New Jersey.
I'll cede you the point that you know your life better than I know your life.
No, it might be. Well, what happened was. And by the way, in the telling of this on this podcast, I may drop details about it that I normally don't tell conversationally because they feel too braggy and douchey.
Right.
But just for the sake of public record, I will
say. Yeah, this is about how you start on Ally McBeal for two seasons?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That
yeah.
you are mm-hmm. Calista Flockhart?
Mm-hmm. I am Calista
normally
Flockhart.
Normally you don't bring that up.
Yep. But I did improv in high school, and then I did it in college, and I
went college?
Montclair State University, and I in my acting class was Matt Donnelly, and also Jim Fastante, two like people that you may know from the New York improv scene.
Yeah.
So I was in acting class at Montclair State with Matt Donnelly in the BFA acting program, and he asked me to start. He was a big improviser from Red Bank, New Jersey, and he wanted to start a group on campus.
Fastante?
No, Matt Donnelly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Donnelly's sort of the alpha organizer.
Oh, totally. Completely. Yeah. Completely.
Donnelly was in my level three.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great and super alpha. So he asked me and Jim Fastante and one other guy from our acting class to start an improv group. So we started a group called Possible Side Effects, and we started doing short form. And Matt knew this guy, Keith, who was a television producer.
Right.
And Keith came to see these 18-year-old kids doing short-form improv who'd only been doing it for like a few months.
Right.
And said, I'm going to put you guys on television.
Right.
So we came here to New York to a studio on 19th Street and shot a pilot of short-form improv games and sketches.
Yeah.
With us and John Cameron Telfer.
Who's a Chicago City Limits guy.
Yeah, Sean. From The Swarm. Jesus.
Conroy?
Sean Conroy. Yeah,
another Chicago City Limits guy at that time.
And John O'Donnell.
Also CCL. I guess, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the warm-up comic was Eddie Pepitone.
Yeah. Well, they were all buds.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So
yeah.
In the 90s, like, Chicago City Limits was the big improv theater in New York, like before UCB.
Yep. Yep.
And it's called Chicago because in 1980, it was like Chicago people came and formed Chicago City Limits. I don't know, sci-fi. Is this interesting to an improv nerd like you, Keaton?
Yeah, of course.
And so I moved to New York in 96, and they were the big thing. Like, if you read, like, the New York Press or Village Voice, Chicago City Limits had big ads for classes and shows. They had a big theater on First Avenue and 60th Street.
They did reviews.
With like, $20 tickets and, like, big sold out. And it was all short-form stuff. Good shows. Like, Andy Daly was in that.
Harold, right?
No, it was all short-form stuff. Okay. You took classes. They taught long-form in the classes.
Mm-hmm.
And in the mid-90s, I took a class there, and, like, John Cameron Telfer was, like, super funny dude, was the cast member, one of their main teachers. Sean Conroy was sort of like a less senior guy, also very funny, teaching. John O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. And then UCB arrived in 96 just as a little troop.
Yeah.
In 98, really got going and sort of stole people from that. Well,
people came over.
Yeah, yeah. People liked the UCB better. So, like, Sean Conroy left CCL. John O'Donnell left CCL.
Yeah.
Telfer never left.
No.
Andy Daly was a CCL guy, started doing stuff at.
Yeah.
And so these were like existing New York improv people who got won over to UCB when they arrived. And this is coinciding now with your 18-year-old self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So naturally, this guy Keith grabbed CCL guys.
Yes. Because
they were the big...
And spent a lot of money. And this is where the story gets really douchey.
Okay.
In order to try to make us funny and better at improv and ready for television,
right,
this guy Keith hired Sharna Halpern to come in for a weekend and do workshops with us.
Right, founder of Improv Olympic.
Yes, we went to a suite in the Hotel Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And spent like, or it might have been a week, it might have been all I know is we went there and spent all day having Sharna Halpern teach us short form improv games.
Yeah.
And she said, if you guys want to get good at this, you have to go to the UCB.
Okay.
And I'd never heard of the UCB before.
Yeah,
I'd never been there.
They would have been here for like a year and a half at that time.
Yeah.
And mostly just doing their own shows at like open mics and stuff.
So we
not
went
even open
to
mics, like Luna Lounge. Like,
right.
Yeah.
So we went to the UCB Theater to see Ass Cat, and I was immediately like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
And this was on 22nd Street?
This is on 22nd Street.
Okay.
Yeah.
They probably just had opened.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I remember like sitting on the floor or in the front row or on the floor in the front. Because back then it was a raised stage. You didn't sit on the stage, you sat on the floor around the stage.
The old UCB Theater looked more like UCB East.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, this is amazing. I love this. And I started taking classes. Me and Steve Booth, who was another possible side effects guy, took 101 with Ali together.
Do you remember who was in that Ass Cat? It must have been the UCB4.
It must have been the UCB4 and Ali probably.
Yeah, Ali
like,
Farnakian.
Probably Dorf, you know.
Kevin Dorf, Conan Ryder.
Yeah, these are the days
who'd all known each other from Second City in Chicago.
Yeah, these are the days when you could go and see the UCB4 and Stack and Dorf and Tina.
Yeah.
And
Tina who?
Tina Fey.
Right, okay.
And people like that, you know, and like... Andy Dick would, or not, oh,
Andy
sometimes
Richter.
Andy Dick would do the monologues.
But Andy Richter,
Andy
was
Richter
more
would
common,
do the monologues, you know.
Adam
or
McKay
like,
would drop in now and then.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Big
and
names.
You could
this
tell,
is like probably the highest concentration of like comedy clout at Ass Cat
yes,
all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not fair, but it was big.
It's pretty, I mean, in terms of, you know.
Yeah.
And you could tell what kind of show it would be by which UCB member didn't show up. Like
that's right. Without Amy, you'd have less like commitment in acting. Without Besser, it'd be like a little bit less premise-y.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Without Ian, a little less realistic. Without Walsh, less whimsical. That definitely is true.
Yeah.
Like they were awesome.
Oh,
four
amazing.
Of them.
Amazing.
It's still, to me, the best improv show. I think, grab the four of them.
Oh,
and it'd be the best show.
They're still the best. And they were doing their sketch shows at the time. There was so much. I mean, of course, today there's so much amazing stuff, but it just felt
been
like
blown away.
It just felt like such fucking magic that nobody knew about.
Yeah.
So I started taking classes, and then around that time, we were doing short form. We did a short form show every month at MSU, and then around that time, we were like, "Let's do long form. Fuck it."
Yeah.
You know.
And Sharna and the UCB converted you.
Yeah, and so we sort of dragged. We had a big audience who loved our short form, and we just dragged them into long form.
It's
we
very
like,
common. I see a lot of short form college groups who are good at short form, and they nail it, but they get turned on to long form, and they weirdly have to convert their existing audience to like it.
Mm-hmm.
They have to like
work
it in and kind of like sandwich it between short form things. I know that is this Ohio State? You're Ohio State guy, right, Keaton?
No.
Oh, that's Matt Starr.
Yeah.
Were you nodding your head, though? Were you involved in this, or you've just witnessed such a thing?
I mean, I've heard about it.
I unfairly dragged you in. I apologize.
It's okay.
But I've also, in like teaching workshops and traveling around for Torco, I know that there are short-form groups that are like, we love long-form, but our audience...
Jesse Lee at Haverford, his group did this. CT Improv, which is Connecticut guys that I know because I'm from Connecticut.
They're great.
They do tons of short form. They try to work in long form. Joe Wengert, Neil Casey's group, Rubber Chicken, was like sketching short form, and they worked in long form after they saw UCB.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys were ahead of all that nonsense.
So, anyway, trying to not spend too much time on this unless you want to spend more time on it. Like, we were... Possible Side Effects was a fucking great group. We were like, we had the luxury.
Super devoted.
Yeah. We had the luxury of being 12 miles outside of New York City, and we could come in whenever we wanted. We got a weekly Saturday night show at a theater in Montclair because we rented the theater. We convinced them to rent us the theater, and we would do this 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock show. We would go to New York or go to Hoboken and pick up people like John Ross Bowie and like UCB teachers and drive them to Montclair to teach us workshops on Saturday mornings or to like do shows with us.
Right.
This is where I met Gethard. This is where I met Eli. You know,
Billy needed some out there. Yeah. Billy Meredith stuff out there.
Yeah, yeah. I was very lucky to be able to go in Saturday, take a UCB class, then drive back out and practice what I had learned in front of an audience that night.
And you guys were, I remember, I mean, I was taking classes at the time, very new to improv in general, but PSC was like, this is a time, there's no indie scene, there's no indie groups, there's nowhere to do long-form improv except for UCB, and you can't get on that stage if you're a student. It's just the Herald, it's Herald teams and that's it.
Yeah.
And there's no weekend teams.
Right.
Like, it's the UCB is the weekend team.
Yeah.
Swarm was a Herald team.
Yes.
And so, like, PSC was a rare thing where it was these guys who had, you guys had your own established scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you were all taking classes, and everybody in PC was really good.
Yep.
So you were like an early kind of like indie brand.
Yeah.
And you guys definitely had the glazed eye look of the devoted to improv.
Oh, yeah.
Like just your minds were lost.
We just loved it.
It was
we
like
loved
you,
it.
Yeah.
We spent all of our time together. We drove out to Chicago two summers in a row to study with Miles Stroth at the Improv Olympic.
Right.
We like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And Miles became our like guru. Like I still
very popular too out in LA.
He's amazing. Like, yeah. I wish that I like lived in. I wish I could be around him all the time. he was great. But so yeah. So that's
and you're at that age too when like when you fall in love with something, you fall in love hard. I feel like you fall in love with improv at 19. It's like the people you fall in love with, the bands you fall in love with. Yeah. It you can't fall in love as hard as you can then.
And
improv is also. Who at any age that you discovered is kind of culty and kind of grabs you.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys were fully in the matrix.
Completely.
Yeah.
And my consistent and still existing inability to plan ahead in my life was not biting me in the ass back then.
Right. Yeah, you're too young to suffer from the consequences of that.
It was like, I'll do anything I want. I don't give a shit.
And you guys were good. Like, you guys were all good. Like, Donnelly was in my class, was excellent. Nice dude.
Yep.
You know, like organized, had it together. Obviously had taken a lot of stuff outside of UCB, was sort of ahead of the pack.
Yeah. Really
great. Really good. You were smart and like everybody. PC was really good group.
And then I auditioned. I took, you know, classes. And this is back when there was like four levels.
Right.
And you willingly.
UCB taught four. And I think Ali taught four.
Yeah. And oh, by the time I got to level four. They had all moved away.
Yeah, that's right.
the UCB.
But when we were in level one,
away. They
were still doing level four. But by the time we got there,
and
they were
you
done.
Would alternately,
Ian was still doing it.
He came back. You would alternately dream of and be terrified of getting to level four and taking classes with the UCB.
Sure. Yeah.
But we did hire Amy to teach us a workshop. We like went to the 22nd Street Theater
pre SNL. Amy.
Saturday
she was like
morning.
Doing bits on Conan. And
yeah.
Obviously, everyone knew she was going to be successful. But
yeah.
Was not yet fully occupied with a gig yet.
Right.
Right.
So, and this is also back when you would like just retake 201 and 301 just because you would do a 201 and be
options.
Like, I need more of that.
Right.
So you would retake 201. And there was also like 12 people in classes, you know, like
there was like five concurrent sections of level one, three concurrent two level threes, two level fours, maybe three.
Yeah.
No, four, because all of them did it.
The community was much smaller, so you would, like...
You could just take a class.
We would take... If you and I took 101 together, it'd be like, oh, are you taking 201 with me, or are you taking it with another teacher? Like, are we going to be in 201, or are you going to be
in the Saturday one, or are you in the Monday night one?
Exactly.
That's it, yeah.
So then auditions happened, and it was the first ever Harold auditions.
Right, before this, Armando Diaz... This is also interesting for current people in the New York scene. Like, the Magnet in the Pit obviously didn't exist, and those guys were... Not just at the UCB, big time part of the UCB.
Yeah.
Farnakian was like taught the level fours, was went to Herald Night.
Did ASCAT every week.
Did ASCAT every
week.
Was
amazing.
Hilarious performer.
So good.
Everybody like loved him.
Yeah.
And the UCB, although everyone loved them, were distant, off doing gigs and auditioning. Ali, you saw.
Right.
Like I knew Ali.
Yeah. Armando, you saw.
Armando taught all the level threes and picked everybody on Herald Night. He put me on Herald Night.
Mm-hmm.
He put everybody in a Herald Night until there was a committee.
Yep.
And you saw Armando went out to McManus. You bothered him about Chicago, and he told you.
You would do a college improv festival, and he'd be there, like, drunk with you.
Right, right. So these guys were like, to me, and the one reason why, skipping ahead, when the pit happened, which I don't want to get into too much because it involves bad blood of people that I don't know, and I don't know all the details, but I can say this, just like, it was a real personal, like, divorce.
Oh, it was
where
huge.
Where when Ali and Armando left, they took the business manager who knew all the, you know, knew all the finances, and the UCB were very hurt mm-hmm. and angry about it, and yep. But we all were tied to Armando and Ali. Like, I didn't know Matt Walsh, but I fucking knew Armando Diaz.
Right.
And it was a weird split.
Yeah.
That was, none of us knew how to handle it.
Yeah.
So at the time you're talking about, this was a real, we didn't appreciate it at that time, but the seeds of what would become the New York improv scene were all in one room.
Yeah.
And you were fully immersed in that. Yeah. So yeah, getting Amy for a workshop, seeing Armando around. Mm-hmm. So we're getting to – I'm talking so much
because
you're
okay.
Like – you're one of the few people who goes back far enough that I actually have info
yeah,
to
no,
say.
It's,
like,
it's
I don't
great.
Know what the hell Bucky did for their mono scene this week. But I know that, like, Cowbot was in the first cage match and Aaron yeah. Bergeron gave a pack of candy to Delaney.
Oh, yeah. Guys like Aaron Bergeron and those guys, like, God, it was so great. It was really fun. It's still really fun, but, you
it's
know.
It's still very fun.
It's like – I'm talking about this like a 101 student right now is experience or 201 student. Like, wow, look at how amazing this community
sure,
is.
Yeah.
Like, that was it for me back then. And also, like, just
your audition. You're coming up in the first round of auditions.
Yeah, first ever auditions for Harold Teams.
This is a brand new committee who was Billy Merritt, Michael Delaney, Julie Brister, and Kevin Mulaney.
Yes.
Was Armando not
and
even
Armando.
Involved?
I think he was.
I feel like Armando burned out, and he got so sick of everybody bothering him that he was like...
No, because I remember...
He was still involved.
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah. All right. Anyway, this is a committee.
I'm pretty sure he was still involved. So, yeah, I auditioned, and I was like, I'm fucking getting it.
Yeah,
I was like,
very
I
driven.
Gonna do this. I'm gonna own this fucking audition.
Right.
And I did. and I remember like one thing that I'll never forget from that audition is somebody said, and I was pretty good at this kind of stuff back then. I don't know. I might have become too lazy for it nowadays. But somebody, I was doing a scene with somebody who said like, oh yeah, and you have 8 children, right? And I rattled off their names in a row. I rattled off 8
yeah.
children's names right in a row. And like it got a laugh from the committee.
I mean, that's an awesome thing to be able to do, to just like make all those choices really fast.
Actually, I should say, well, no, my first audition when I came back was a horrible shit show. But my second audition I was pretty good in.
What do you mean 2 different auditions?
When I left the theater for a few years.
Oh, your hiatus.
You mentioned, and then I had to come.
We're going
to
get to that, yeah.
But so... So yeah, and then I got put on a Harold team called Petrol.
Yes.
I guess I got a phone call or an email or something.
Well, that was new because Armando would never tell anybody they got on.
Yeah.
So the committee, I think, was like a new, like, let's do this in an organized way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was crazy, and I was very happy.
Any PSC guys on there?
No, it was, let's see.
Here
we
go.
Mark Sam Rosenthal, Brian Fountain, Aaron Rose Foley,
Dave Lombard,
Brian Finkelstein. Who am I thinking? Brandon Calhoun. Did I mention Brandon Calhoun?
No,
Brandon
that's right.
Calhoun.
And you.
Yeah. So it was those
are all people who kind of started roughly the same time, and it's all their first team.
Yeah.
It was like the baby team.
Yep. Yeah. And we were all very excited. And our name came out of like a recurring gag in the first conversation we ever had.
Yeah.
That's it. We were off and running. We like
Petrol was a real like diligent team in that they were like you were all except for Finkelstein who was hilariously like and Finkelstein's hilarious.
Oh, he's a
and great. But he was like just a hair. He was like a notch older and a bit over it.
Right.
Just because he's too old to lose his shit over like what kind of entrance music you should have.
Right. Right.
And that's Brian's personality anyway.
Yeah.
But like the rest of you were like fresh-faced zealots,
yeah.
I think.
Dave Lombard and I used to do a lot of blue-collar guys sitting during their lunch break and talking to each other scenes.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was just, we were all, it was great. It was very fun. I remember like we had Amy coach us a couple of times,
sure,
which was like fun.
Yep.
It was a good time. And that lasted, I guess, well, about a year after that, I quit.
Right.
I quit the theater. I thought I would never do comedy again, and that lasted for about 3 years.
Let's talk about this in this fashion, because this is what I think is interesting about you. Because you talk about how you went in an audition and you wanted to nail it, and you did. I can totally imagine that. because when I see you do improv, what I really admire about you is you're cerebral. You're smart enough, basically, that you can front brain it and do pretty fucking great.
I don't think
that's all that you do, but the UCB really, as opposed to other improv places, likes people who can get an organized idea and have topic sentences for each of their scenes.
Right.
What's your plan here? How do you express that in a nice, concise sentence? You mm-hmm. can do that.
Yeah.
You can do that under pressure,
under duress.
It's good. I mean, you're good at it, and the UCB likes that kind of style.
Yeah.
Usually that goes along with I'm not thinking of you when I say this, but as a teacher, when people who can do that sometimes have trouble letting go and just letting the actor side, the sort mm-hmm. of instinct side, take over.
Yeah.
But I feel like you kind of had that spiritual inclination also. We took a Meisner-y class.
Oh, that class
where it
was the best.
A lot about letting go and being spiritual and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say is I feel like the same thing that made you so smart and driven and a zealot and into it also catches up with you sometimes, and you have breakdowns or I don't know what the word is, that's too harsh a word, but you've had to learn how to measure yourself, right?
Yeah.
Moderate, the same thing that can make you get psyched.
Oh, yeah.
And, attack something.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn how to.
I have a very obsessive, addictive personality.
Yeah, the same thing that makes you drive out to Chicago and see Miles Stroth.
Yeah.
Is it Stroth?
I always thought it was Stroth.
You know him. I know the dude. Stroth. And so I think part of your journey to me is learning how to get that in, you know.
Yeah.
You had to take off and chill the fuck out.
Yeah, I had to go put the cart behind the horse.
Yeah, you changed your life.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, you left the theater.
I swore I would never do comedy again or improv again. I was I'm going to find something else to do with my life.
And you went to work for Ralph Lauren?
No,
Is that right, though?
At the time, yes. At the time, I was working for a government subcontractor in New Jersey.
You sort of became an improv scene.
Yeah, I did. and then I...
That sounds like a job I would make up if I was in an improv scene.
It was ridiculous. During the height of the Iraq war, I helped build cluster bombs.
How old are you at that time?
24. How old am I now? I was 24.
What happened to the TV show, by the way?
I was going to ask that, too.
Okay. So we shot a pilot, and we shot 7 episodes. I made way too much money for a person at that age and spent it all. It was going to be on.
How much are we talking?
God.
You don't have to give me a number, but what?
I mean,
are we talking tens of thousands?
No, $10,000 probably.
Yeah,
about,
that's a lot for
that.
A 19 year old to have dropped on him.
I think. And spent it immediately. Just spent it all. Just
sure.
I think it was that much. It might have been. Maybe it was $5,000 or $6,000.
As long as I know the ballpark. I know. You know. Are we talking $1,000, $10,000, or $100,000? I know what you're saying.
The show was supposed to be. The show was bought by the PAX Network. I don't know if you remember the PAX Network.
I think
you
it still exists, right?
PAX.
Yeah.
Does it still exist?
Oh, they're family Christian stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They were in their early days.
Exists. I still see it.
Yeah.
No business having a short form comedy and sketch show on their network. And we were sponsored by Pepsi and Saturn. We shot 7 episodes. The sponsors pulled out, and then the network canceled the show.
Okay.
And then all the we couldn't pay the producers couldn't pay us the money they owed us. They couldn't pay anybody involved in the show the money that they owed them. Couldn't even pay to get the tapes of the shows. So the studio that we shot the shows at still has all the footage of the shows.
Oh, wow.
Find that.
So
crazy.
Yeah. So that's what happened with that. Where were we?
Wasn't the aftermath of that was that humbling at all when that got canceled?
Oh, it was awful. I was working. Oh, at the time.
I mean, you were riding pretty high out of nowhere.
Awful.
So was there sort of a come
down?
I was.
What's that?
Why'd you leave?
Why'd I leave the theater or why'd the show end?
Let's do the show first.
Theater.
So the show ended.
So
when the show ended, I was devastated. I was a 18, 19 year old kid. You don't know how to handle anything emotionally, especially that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Because I was I'm going to be famous.
Yes,
I
like
actually,
it.
This is so, I still regret this. It's so stupid of me. But I was a BFA acting major at Montclair State. The summer that we shot the show, I dropped my major down to a BA in theater because I was I'm not going to have time to study acting.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a TV star. So I didn't know anything. And it was devastating. And we had a meeting, me and Matt and Steve and Jim. And maybe some of the other people in the group had the time at the time had a meeting and were are we still a group? Are we still going to keep doing improv shows?
Yeah.
And we were all like, yeah. So, like, we did it. But it was super fucking devastating.
Well, that's got to be reassuring that you guys, like, we still like this and we said enough of this to keep going.
Yeah. I left the theater because my life was a mess. I was in bad shape. I spent way too much time doing improv and not enough time being a human being and being nice to people and being nice to myself. I was just I was a mess. I was in bad shape. And I, like, things got to a point where I just fell apart. I just couldn't do it anymore.
Right.
Like, I was treating myself and other people in my life like shit.
Yeah.
And some people in my life were like, we don't want you around anymore.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, this isn't working.
Yeah.
I gotta stop.
But then you go and do the extreme the other way.
Yeah.
Right? It's like...
Well, yeah. Not to get too deep into the circumstances, but I felt like people really didn't want me around who were involved in this community.
Mm. Yeah.
And I probably overreacted a little bit at the time. Yeah, it probably was a little bit too much of an extreme, but I needed to do it at the time. I needed to get the fuck out of here. I was afraid of continuing to come around here. And I also just was like, I need something different.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was seriously like, I'm going to do something else with my life. I don't want to do comedy anymore. I don't want to perform. I hate this.
This is unhealthy.
In fact, I never liked it.
Right.
And I had a job and I started doing music. I started making music in my living room and going to open mic nights and playing songs. And
yeah.
I was like, maybe I'll do this. I don't know. And then about 2.5 years later, I started getting that itch again.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do this.
See, that's interesting because it is dramatic, it is pronounced, but at that age, I mean, a lot of people, before they're 25 especially, I mean, it can happen at any age, age is the number, blah, 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 but early 20s is a time to, you're trying on different versions of yourself still.
Yeah.
It's like, am I this? Maybe I'm this. I'm kind of this. Maybe I'm kind of this. Like, it is hard to say.
Yeah.
And even though you were, and going back to the TV show, and you're like, I'm going to be famous. You might have been.
True.
Like, for people who do get on shows in their 20 and it sticks, that's what it feels like. Out of nowhere, you're doing this thing, and then it just keeps going.
Yeah.
And it's got to screw you up.
Yeah.
So you just got – probably to the benefit of your character, got, dumped from that weird trajectory early.
Oh, probably, yeah. Yeah.
So you went away into your – what I've always called the Frusciante hiatus.
Thank you.
Into – back into the wilds of Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I thought we'd never see you again.
Mm-hmm.
And you left Petrol.
Did you know he left?
Yeah,
you made
I wasn't close friends with John, but at that time everybody knew everybody in the. I mean, we were friends, but not close friends,
right?
Because we had taken classes together and ran this shared experience of going to Harold. It'd be like someone that you know well only from the jam. You heard they went away. You feel some attachment to them, but maybe not enough to call them up or something like that. You just kind of ask around. Anybody hear from this person? That's what it was like for
left.
Me. Uh-huh. Yeah, dude's gone, man.
Did you make an announcement that you're I'm leaving?
No. I sent an email to Petrol, and I said probably a long, overdramatic email because that's what my life was back then. And,
yeah.
And basically said, I'm quitting.
Long, dramatic emails to your Herald team is a rite of passage.
yeah, and then that was it.
Shit.
Yeah. And then when I came back, I went to the Magnet.
Right.
Because I was afraid to go to UCB for some reason.
UCB does that to people, man.
Here's the thing.
If a UCB burns you, or if you feel like you were burned, or just if you got burned while you were here, it's hard to separate it.
I'll say one interesting thing. I always thought, when I would start thinking about coming back to improv, I was like, you know what, man? It's been, 3 years. There's probably been all these, drastic changes and leaps forward in the way improv is done. You know, I thought it was like an advancing technology.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? And then I went to see a show. Oh, I went to see Matt Donnelly was in a show. I think maybe Matt and Jim or just Matt were in a show at the Pit at the time.
Yeah.
And I went to see their show, and it was the first improv show I'd seen in years. And there was a show before that that was bad. An improv set before that that was bad. And it was bad for all the same reasons I remember improv being bad for.
Yeah,
And I was like, oh, nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Improv is bad.
So while you left when the Pit and the Magnet happened?
Yeah. The Pit and the Magnet happened while I was there. I was at the big all-theater meeting that the UCB had to, address what had happened and, basically, vent their – I don't want to get too far into it either, but, vent their feelings about it and, tell people how they – wanted people to handle it.
Yeah.
So I was there for that, yeah. And there were a couple of, well, one person in particular on Petrol who was very pro Pitt, and I was like, or he was, God, Jesus, it's so long ago, I don't even remember why I don't like him. but he had this very kind of company man attitude about it that I found very
weird,
offensive, aggravating.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then it was shortly after that. That was sort of when I was in the like real downslope of my life at the time.
Right.
You know, when I was like sort of really heading closer and closer to collapse. But I went to the Magnet when I first came back. I took classes for maybe a year at the Magnet.
Yeah.
Was on a couple of house teams at the Magnet.
Yep.
And then wanted to take UCB class, and I sent an email to the class registrar, and I said, listen, this is who I am. This is what I've done. I'm willing to take 101 if that's what I need to do, but I'm just wondering if it would be possible for me to start at 201. Like, asking. Like, I was willing to do whatever was asked of me.
This would be going to Kevin Mullaney, who was running the school
But I didn't know it was Kevin at the time, and I got a
response. Oh, this was classes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I got a response from Kevin saying, hey, John, this is Kevin. Take whatever class you want. So I took a 501, I think, with Kevin Mullaney.
Yeah.
And the second, it was in this room, actually.
Yeah.
It was in this room. it was in this room, and the second Kevin said, everybody up, I was like, oh, I'm home. This is where I belong.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yeah. And then I, there was a Harold audition that came up some months later, and I remember standing outside of this building in the line just looking around and being like, who the fuck are all these people?
And look how many there are.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I knew nobody. And I auditioned, and I got a callback, and my callback was fucking horrible. It was terrible. I blew it.
Do you think you were in your head for that? I mean,
probably. And just rusty.
Yeah.
Just, like, not knowing what I was doing. And then the next year or whatever it was. Oh, and before that was Project Improvise.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
But the next year I auditioned, and I killed it. That was the callback that I probably talked about in here where Delaney fell out of his chair accidentally during a scene.
Yeah, that's right.
He was leaning back in his chair, and he leaned back too far, and his chair fell. And I knew exactly what to do, which is keep going. Like, I didn't acknowledge it at all.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, if you don't acknowledge that that happened, you will get on a Harold team.
Because you got to commit to the –
I just kept doing it.
You did it on purpose.
I did. I pushed Delaney out of his chair with my mind. But yeah, Project Improviser. Do you want to talk about Project Improviser?
Yeah, I think it was interesting because you were gone. Then when you came back, short hair John came back, kind of like Gandalf the White.
Right.
New guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Project Improviser was this thing that John Flynn and Gethard? Or just Flynn?
It was John Flynn's baby.
Like a reality show for improv, like a web series where like a Survivor-style elimination thing where you'd start with like 8 people and each week someone would get eliminated until you got left just with one improviser.
And every week you
had
a challenge.
And each week there'd be a different teacher would come on and give you like run a workshop and then give you a challenge.
Yep.
Then they would perform at school night every week and they'd film it. And then after the judges would pick somebody to be removed.
Yeah, yeah. The judges would – you'd wait and then they'd come out on stage. The audience
would leave.
And they'd
tap you on the shoulder like they lined everybody
they
up.
They tagged you out. Yep.
That's right. They tagged you out.
Yep.
Oh, that's right.
Is that online?
Yeah, they're all on UCB online. Comedy. Yeah, Project Improviser.
Somebody should bring that back.
It was John Flynn has talked about doing a second season of it. I'm not sure.
It was a weird. It was kind of good. You saw these teachers in all these workshops. You saw this discussion of improv, and everybody in the episodes would admit it's weird. Like improv's supposed to be a group
it was very
sport,
weird.
And yet you're trying to look better than everybody to survive.
Yeah.
Although that is,
maybe it should be teams then.
Yeah.
It was, let's see, it was me, Sean, Marcy Giro, Nick Zimmerman,
Beth Newell,
and
Peter
McGurney.
McGurney,
yeah.
I can't say anybody's name.
I might be saying it wrong. And then there were two others. I'm too lazy to think about who they were.
Okay.
But yeah, it was weird, but I did that.
Cody Melton?
Cody Melton.
I'm not going to be able to remember. Because I already forget who we've said. We said Marcy and Nick,
yeah,
and Beth and Peter, you and Sean, Cody. There's one more.
I don't
think.
Know.
Yeah. All
but right. I did that as a way to like say I'm back. I auditioned for that as a way to announce
you did great
my, like return.
I mean, actually, everybody in that show was really good.
Everybody was great. It was fun. It feels weird talking about myself so much. Normally, I love it, but I feel weird.
Everyone says that after this.
It's true. Now I know what they mean.
Yep.
But yeah, that was fun, but it was also weird because it was competitive. And
that was kind of your arrival back, though, for those of us who knew you from before. It was like, oh, looking for Shanti.
Yeah.
Like, I would watch those episodes and be like, geez, he's really doing great. I mean, again, I really, this is not bullshit. Everyone on that show was good.
Yeah.
But it, also, it was such a high press. I'd watch that and be like, God, what would I do in this situation? I'd cry.
It was weird. And there were challenges. There was one challenge in particular that I was like, I'm not doing it. I don't care. I don't care if I don't get immunity this week. I'm not doing this challenge.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Were they improv-based challenges?
There were some of them were improv-based. Like, one of them was that you had to host Harold Knight. Come up with a bit for hosting Harold Knight, and then the funniest person got immunity for that week.
Did they have like a laugh-o-meter?
I don't know what it was. The judges would just say you win. But there was one challenge where you had to go and like go out on the street and like ask people for money.
Oh yeah, some kind of like on the street.
Yeah. And like whoever got the most money won immunity. And that was the one where I was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
This is stupid.
Yeah.
Because especially I saw one person in particular on the show go to where they knew all their friends were and say, like, listen, just give me as much money as you can. I'll give it back to you at the end of the night, but I just need
very
a bunch
reality
of money
show,
right
though.
Now. I was like, fuck it, I'm not doing this. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. You went pretty far on this, right? Didn't you make it down to the last three?
The last three or four. The last four, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, yeah, there was that. And then I got on Trucks. That was my first Harold team back.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And were you one of the founding members of Trucks?
No. I was added in replacement. I replaced Ben Schwartz on Trucks.
Okay, yeah. Trucks really loved each other. Trucks was like
man.
A happy team.
We were great. Yeah. We loved each other.
I didn't say that. I do think I do think Trucks is very good, but I'm speaking to something different. Like,
I mean, in that regard.
Separate
from
their ability.
Yeah. In that
Trucks was like a real happy, psyched to do shows with each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fun, physical, crazy
very physical.
Shows.
That was a real cerebral, kind of gamey, pattern gamey time of the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in the wake of the Shoves and Dillinger. Everyone was like trying to out premise.
Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely inferring a lot. I'm not sure anybody would agree with that. But anyway, you guys were very physical. That's true.
Yeah.
Stage picture-y. Nate Smith is on the team, right?
Yep. Nate Smith, Nick Ross, John Gutierrez, Amber Petty.
Achilles.
Yeah.
Achilles got added at least.
He got added. Yeah. Some other people. Look at the wall. It's on the wall.
Could we... somebody look up Trucks and so, could I ask someone to do that on their little magic boxes? We'll get to it in a second.
Yeah, I feel like I'm sort of talking and not letting you ask.
No, I think it's interesting. I mean, okay, so you come back. So let's talk about, we're going to get to improv theory stuff in a second. So then, well, let's talk about getting the associate job. I feel like that was another kind of like.
Okay.
So Anthony King was the artistic director.
Right.
And he decided that, he needed an, the theater's growing a lot and all this business, so he needs an associate.
Right.
And
he needed somebody to answer his emails for him.
Well, yeah. And to help watch all the Spanx and just like the thing got
Yeah.
Okay, the original Trucks is Bob Acevedo, Gutierrez, Bridie Harrington.
Bridie, oh yeah.
Amber Petty, Nick Ross, Santangeli Schwartz, and Nate Smith. Then you replaced Santangeli. Then Achilles and Sarah Burns replaced Amber Petty and Ben Schwartz.
Right, okay.
And then Betsy Stover replaced Bridie.
That's
she
right.
Moved to Portland.
Yeah, she moved to Portland to write children's books.
Can I ask you to look up Project Improviser and I'll look at that?
So that job was put online. Anthony created that job. And
you got it. And then,
I
if you weren't.
And I got it.
And if you weren't. I mean, being in a Herald team is sort of like one of the few pieces of currency that everybody accepts as. Mm-hmm. Means you're part of this, but then getting that job was even more. Like you were solidly back in the UCB.
Oh yeah, oh for sure.
Yeah,
and also completely swallowed up by it. That was the last. At that point, I just
Greg DeSantis is who we.
That's it. God, how could I have forgotten about Greg?
Yeah. Someone tell John Flynn to
We're looking at the IRC Improv Wiki, Mulaney's Improv Wiki, and the Project Improviser page says, someone tell John Flynn to fill this in.
Ha!
It's funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got this job. I was working. That's when I was working at Ralph Lauren. Had no business working there. I got this job, and I have been here ever since.
Let's talk about improv. So how was your improv different that second time around, or was it any different? Or let's talk about Trucks. Let's start with here, because I think Trucks is fun and nice. What made Trucks enjoyable?
Well, the fact that we all loved each other, the fact that the improv was all, like, we had this swagger, this confidence.
Yeah.
And this kind of, this absurdness, this absurdity to us. And big physical moves. Like, our shows were very, very big and physical. Like, I remember a scene in a show in a Harold where there was a fire going on, and I came in as somebody who was, oh, for some reason there was a very, I think Achilles was playing like a very big fat man.
Yeah.
And there was a fire in a building, and I came in and I was somebody who was jumping out of a window to escape the fire.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what I wanted to happen, and I didn't tell my teammates that I wanted it to happen, and they did it anyway. Two people came in and picked me up and, like, carried me over to where Achilles was and then bounced me off of him back into the window.
Yeah.
So that kind of, like, fun physicality made Trucks really great. And just, like, silliness
and
goofiness.
What was the song you guys came out to?
I don't remember.
You guys came out to a great song, I remember.
I don't remember.
Really?
I really don't remember that stuff anymore.
I could have sworn you picked it.
I probably did, but I don't remember.
Was it the next episode by...
oh, that's what it was. Yes, yeah. It was. Yeah. See, you remember better than I do.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I think, you know, me, white boy from Connecticut, had not listened to Dr. Dre ever. Or Snoop Dogg?
You next episode?
Yeah.
It's Dr. Dre featuring Snoop Dogg.
So I'm Chronic?
Chronic 2001.
Thank you.
Which came out in 99.
What? Yeah.
I remember thinking that Trucks was having fun.
Yes.
I think also it was everybody's, like, second team for the most part.
Probably, yeah.
Right? Not Achilles. Achilles was new to it. It felt like everybody's second team in the way that, like, you're relaxed in a good way about stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, this doesn't have to be...
Totally.
What represents me on my gravestone? This is just, how do we have fun doing this?
I can look back on it now as that, but I also probably was terrified. You know, I was terrified constantly on Harold Knight. I was always terrified.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
But you're the guy who says, I'm going to kill this audition, and you did it.
And then I would go on Harold Knight and be like, I'm going to get cut. I'm not good enough. Like, we didn't do a good enough show.
Really?
I didn't get into enough scenes. I didn't make enough moves. I'm terrible.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you had already... Speaking of throwing yourself out of a burning building, like, left the UCB and then built yourself back up. Wouldn't that give you some kind of confidence?
I think that was what was different about my improv. Like, I say that I'm terrified, but I also know I was like, I've lost all of this before and swore I would never do it again. So, and I don't mean to sound corny when I say this, but I felt like, you know what, this is getting to do this again is a gift, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, if I do get cut, I know that, like, my life will go on and I'll figure things out. But I was it wasn't until Airwolf became a weekend team that I relaxed.
What?
It's true. It's true. It wasn't until Airwolf became a weekend team that I was like, all right, I'm safe. I'm safe, and I wish I'd felt like this on Harold Knight, because I see how ridiculous being afraid of Harold Knight is.
Yeah.
And I wish that I could, like, convey that to people. I wish that there was some way to convince people,
you can't,
like,
talk
look,
anybody
this
into
doesn't
that
matter.
Yeah.
You know, like, not that it doesn't matter, but it's like, have fun with it. It's not a big deal, you know, but it's tough to convey to people.
Yeah.
Because nobody could have convinced me of that when I was on a Harold team.
I feel like you're a really good premise person. And
Thank you.
Before I get to that, how do you, I'm going to talk about your acting side, because I feel like, now I'm guessing. You tell me honestly if I'm wrong on this. If, in your opinion, I'm wrong on this. Because I'm asking you to assess yourself.
Okay.
So obviously our own views of ourselves are always a little distorted. What time are we at?
All
right. 50 minutes.
All right. So, how do you... Do you think about your own acting ability? Or what do you think is the way to be a good actor in an improv show? Do you ever think about that?
I stopped thinking about it a long time ago.
Well, honestly. what do you worry about before you go on? Let's say you're about to do a show and you want it to be good. You're like, oh, this one, not that you don't ever not want it to be good, but there's one in particular where you're like, I'd really like this to be a good show, you know, for whatever reason. Like, I need a good show or somebody's watching.
Your mom's in the audience.
Something, yeah. There's just like, so you want to just be...
Be funny.
All right, know? So what do you, like, you're backstage.
Yeah.
You're about to go out.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you, you're like, okay, got it. What do you do? Like, where's your brain at?
I don't know. It's not really thinking about the show anymore. It's just, or if it is, it's just thinking like, be patient.
Do you guys? I haven't seen an Airwolf show in a while. So do you? You do an interview for?
We do an interview, yeah.
And then do you do a second half of the suggestion?
We do a second half. We do the event A right now for the second half, but we're thinking about varying that up. But yeah.
But it's off suggestion.
It's off suggestion of a song lyric.
Okay, and then you do like a big opening.
Then
scene.
Then we do a big
and
opening
you jump
scene,
back
and then,
and you,
yeah.
Okay, so. You're about to start that second mm-hmm. half, right? You get mm-hmm. the suggestion, and it's a song lyric. And let's say it's, I don't know, slicing up eyeballs.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, Pixies.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what I think about for eventes and what I think about for mono scenes.
I want to give you the full lyric. It's actually more important to me than your answer. Slicing up eyeballs, I want you to know.
No, I want you.
Yeah. This is how I was taught the mono scene, and this is how I approach things like this. My first thought is put it in a believable, grounded place.
Okay.
That's my first thought. My first thought is where would this happen?
All right, slicing up eyeballs, I want you to know. Give me a hypothetical.
Slicing up eyeballs, want you to know. I might set that in a doctor's office. I might set it in a waiting room because mm-hmm. waiting rooms are easy to convey and easy to do.
Yeah.
If I was really being imaginative and risky, I might like set it in like a prison or like somehow like be like
slicing.
Yeah. Like confessing to a crime or something like that.
What if I'm your teacher, you're in class and I've noted you got to start in the middle of a higher stake situation and you still want to accommodate your own internal need to start in a grounded place. What do you do? John, I need this to start in the middle of something great. Your suggestion is slicing up eyeballs, I want you to know.
Then I'd probably be like, listen, we don't have time to discuss the moral implications of what I've done. I just need you to help me clean up these bodies.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Pretty, but that's still a real easily, oh, now we know there's been a murderer or some kind of thing.
It's
and
so
like,
important for me to establish this. I'm thinking about like how to make a good show and how to make the audience laugh, like how to bring the audience into it. And you gotta ground shit to be able to do that. You gotta the audience and your teammates need to know this is what's happening. I'm very concerned about that at the tops of scenes and shows.
What if you do an improv with me and I'm in a mood where uh-huh. I don't feel like I don't give a shit about you,
right?
And I get the suggestion and I initiate this to you. I'm gonna do something that doesn't give any kind of who, what, where.
Okay,
Keaton, can we get a suggestion?
Turnstile.
All right, so I walk out and I'm like, I got plenty of money. That's all I say to you. That's my initiation to you. In that kind of tone. I got plenty of money.
Well, sir, we can always discuss refinancing your loans, okay? You've been coming to this bank for a long time.
Yeah, I don't need it.
Okay, well, I think it would be good for you to just think about your financial options. You know, I noticed that you are kind
so
of...
So what are you doing in the... You're trying to, like, create
I'm
the
trying,
setting.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like... ground that. I'm trying to like decide who you are. I'm trying to add to it and decide who you are and like why you my first thought is like, why do you feel like that?
Uh-huh.
You know, or it's where are we and why do you feel like that? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking.
How much when you're doing improv are you playing the player, the person versus the idea? How much do you take into account like who, like if Achilles walks out, mm-hmm. does that influence what your idea is versus Emily or something like that? I just picked Achilles at random. I don't know.
I know, but I... No.
Why did that make you laugh?
Because Achilles makes me laugh. Everybody on Airwolf makes me laugh. I'm just thinking of, like... I thought you were going to ask if they're initiating, and I'm just thinking of the kinds of scenes that they...
Oh, yeah. No. I just mean, like... I mean, I'm affected by that, like...
No. Probably sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably
but not
sometimes.
Consciously. You're not, like...
If I have a good premise, I'm going to initiate it no matter who steps out.
Do you tend to initiate more than you respond?
I probably don't initiate as much as I should, and I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I need to be more aggressive. I'm trying to, in Airwolf and on Torco shows, I'm trying to be a more aggressive.
What's a compliment
initiator.
About your improv that you would really love? Like, what's a compliment you would love to get? Just so that shows what you value in improv.
Like,
whether you actually would get this compliment or not.
That was a great callback.
So you like remembering stuff earlier in the show?
Yeah. That scene that you initiated was really funny. That was a really funny initiation line. Great Walk On. Yeah, those are the kinds.
Really?
Of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about what do you think has helped you about kind of having crashed and burned and come back? You know, or however you want to, you know, whatever.
Yeah. To come back. Again, this is where things get hippy dippy.
Yeah, I like hippy dippy shit.
I really realize that, like, it's okay. Like, if all of this gets taken away today, if I walk out of this room and Alex is like, "You're fired," and then I have an email from Airwolf saying we're cutting you, I'll be devastated.
Yeah.
And wonder what I'm going to do about money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'll be like, it's fine. I'll figure it out. You know, so I think, like, being able to enjoy all of this a little bit more. This is another silly thing. Like, this, I got, after I stopped doing improv, I'd always wanted to get a tattoo, and I didn't because I was an actor. I was like, I don't want to mar my instrument.
Right.
After I left improv, I got my first tattoo, which is the star on my arm. And that, when I first came back to improv, and sometimes it still does, that was like a little reminder of like, oh, like I could not even be here, right?
Yeah.
There was a time when I was like, I'm never going to do this again. So right. I think that was like the biggest thing.
What are your favorite, so you're someone who like, you got really like baptized and like immersed in improv.
Yeah.
You know, when you were pretty young and then like left and came back into it. It's like, what like improv as life philosophies do you like the best, you know?
All of them.
Yeah, do you think about him a lot?
Yeah.
You think, like, do you try to live life as an improviser?
Not as much as I was when I was a 20-year-old naive jerk-off.
Yeah.
When I was like, improv is my religion. And
yeah, blah. You used to be like, you're not like that anymore.
No, but I
Well, talk about how you're different now.
Well, the thing is, I just, I guess it's, I still feel the same way, but I don't talk about it as much because I used to try to ram all my opinions and feelings down everybody's throat. And now I'm just like, well, if I just live my life the way I want to live it, things will sort themselves out.
What does it go through your head? Are you thinking about it? Like,
I think like being able to listen is a great improv skill. Like that translates to life. Like really listening to somebody, really being like, I'm not gonna fucking like think about whatever I want to think about, or like look at my laptop, even though I do that too much. I like, but the idea of like really engaging with people, making other people look good, you know, trying to like make somebody look better than you or as good as you, or you know.
Your job is good for that. Like, your job is to develop the talent.
Oh, this job is a real lesson in humility.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning
because you see people become successful.
Yeah, meaning that my job is to, like, help everybody get successful instead of helping myself get successful, basically. But, yeah, I mean, I think all that stuff is great for life.
You started this podcast.
Yes.
This podcast was your idea. You came over to my desk and said, I want to do a UCB podcast. Do you want to host with me? I don't even really know what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't sure at first whether it was going to be just like plugs of upcoming shows.
That's what I thought it was going to be at first, a way just to like we'll promote the theater.
Yeah. And then we just started talking to the people who were promoting shows about things they did, and that sort of took over.
Mm-hmm.
Another direction it could have gone, which it didn't, would be like doing improv and doing comedy bits, and it didn't go that way.
Yeah.
Other things have done that. But one thing I remember is you were real like – open-minded. The first couple episodes after each of them, I'd be like, "Ah, oh, that was terrible. Do we spend too long doing this? And why do we talk about this so much?" I remember being like that a lot. You'd always be like, "It was fine. It was great." I remember being like, "Should we edit out like 15 minutes of this crap so it's always half an hour?" Mm-hmm. Like, I say, put it all up.
Yeah.
And a lot of times before these episodes, I'll say like, "Do you want to do a pre-interview? Or do you want to set things up?" You're like, "Nope, we're just going to do it." Like, but in a real freeing way, like in a real trusting way, which I. Here's what I'm going to make an assumption. I feel like it's not natural for you, or at least old John Frusciante.
No, not old me at all. But
I feel like that's very like let it be what it's going to be.
Yeah,
that's very improv-y.
Yes,
in my impression.
And I think that's probably another life thing that I don't even realize from improv is like I trust you, and I also think like, well, people, if they don't want to listen, they'll fucking shut it off. It's a podcast. It's free. Who gives a fuck? But yeah, I trust you, and I trust what we're doing. I want to say one other thing. I know we probably have to wrap this up, but I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and you asked me, like, what do I think about in shows? And I want to say this on the podcast. Four or five years ago, well, I guess it was like, no, it was maybe like 3 years ago. three or four years ago, maybe, I took an Anthony King class.
Your boss?
Yes, at the time.
Yeah.
And still, I still consider him my boss.
Yeah. But this is a guy you're sitting right next to and you're working for him. Yeah. You go take a class.
And it was like really weird to take a class with him, and I regretted it almost immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, the dynamics got to be pretty strange.
Yeah. But I also, it was great. I loved it. And he did this exercise called Win the Dollar.
Okay.
Where he put a dollar on a chair, and we had to do two-person scenes, and he said, "You're goal is to win the dollar. Somebody in this class is going to win the dollar, and the way you win the dollar is being the funniest person."
Wow.
And I hated that exercise. I hated it. And yeah. I did the exercise, but during the exercise, I made my scene partner look better than me. And I said to him afterwards, I was like, "That's not how I improvise. I don't go out there to win the dollar." And it has taken me 4 years and 2 years of therapy to realize that I want to win the dollar.
That it's okay that to it's, like root yeah. for yourself, sir.
That, yeah, that it's like that. I do want to go out there and be funny.
Hmm.
So I've been thinking about a lot lately. I've been thinking about when I get into like my head and like self doubt and like I don't know if I want to do this or I don't know if I'm good enough. I will say to myself, go out there and win the dollar.
Really?
So yeah.
But it's so interesting because you've been in a number. I mean, I think that's an interesting story, and I agree that it's part of like a lot of people's inside of improv and not like kind of owning their own desires and going for it is like part of like becoming like your own person in a lot of ways, whether it's career or personal or whatever. But you in particular have had situations where you've been asked to win the dollar a lot. Like Project Improviser is a win the dollar situation.
Right.
Being on a TV show and trying to be famous is a win-the-dollar situation. Auditioning for Harold Knight the first time and the second time mm-hmm. is a win-the-dollar situation.
But
going for the artistic associate position, mm-hmm. I know you're with me, but I just like listing examples.
Yeah, no, but there have been situations like Harold teams and trying to get this job where I have been like, I'm going to win this dollar.
Yeah,
but
without having had that
TV show, Project Improviser, my general career as a writer and a performer has not been up until recently about winning the dollar. So I could do it sometimes, but I couldn't do it all the time. And my general feeling in improv was like, well, you know, I'm going to make my scene partner. Sometimes it was like, well, I'm going to make my scene partner look good. And I think the thing was like to ask me to showcase myself was like, no. You kidding me? That's not what improv is about. It's about making this other person look good. And it's taken me up until recently to realize, like, oh, it's good. It's okay to do that. So
we should wrap up right there. I'm going to ask you two more questions.
Okay.
Tell me, besides Miles, an improv teacher you liked a lot, and I'll take out the Mulaney class because we've talked about that a lot.
Right.
Just what's an improv teacher or class that you liked a lot?
Delaney.
What'd you like about it?
I liked Delaney's – God – trying to remember. I liked,
just even speak generally, like what did you like about
I liked the like focus on I took a Delaney 501 class when I came back too, and just the like the focus on the real art of improv and the like the remembering and learning that it's not just about like getting out there and like doing an improv scene. Like there's nuances and there's ways of artistically approaching and theatrically approaching an improv. I'm from a theater background and I love anything that feels theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
So like those kinds of classes where like you really learn how to like get to the theatricality of it and really treat improv as a true art form, I like.
Okay. Second question. Why should anybody give two shits about Nine Inch Nails?
What?
Ooh, Reznor.
What's the matter with you? You fucking troll.
Actually, I've never heard them.
You've never heard Nine Inch Nails?
Besides like, their
How'd
big
you get
songs
through the 90s?
Besides their big songs on the radio, I haven't heard them. I've never bought a CD and listened to them.
Okay, I mean, you want to talk about like amazing creativity and like a guy who, one guy and also the guys that work with him who like really know what they're doing and like know how to compose music, know how to technically compose music in a way that honors their influences and like can write songs that really get to like this emotional core, you know? The guy's technically fucking brilliant. He's amazing at what he does. Like his aesthetic, the aesthetic of Nine Inch Nails, the aesthetic of the band is phenomenal, you know, and consistent and matures in a way that's not like, you're not like, wait a minute, what's happening right now? Mm-hmm. You know, everything feels earned and everything feels genuine. And like you, it resonates nice. On an emotional level.
That wins the dollar in my book.
I also want to say that I was on Maud Night, but I was not on Gramps.
Right.
We did mention her.
Oh, we did?
Well, yeah, we said Keaton dropped a Gramps.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
This was the only original mention of, though, not a callback to an earlier mention.
Yes, agreed.
All right. Have we talked? Have I talked
we're good.
Long enough?
Yeah. So, John, thanks for being the guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know that even though it's hard to be the guest, and even though I guess in a way it's indulgent, I think it's more that it's brave. So I appreciate
you.
Well,
thank you. There's so many things that I wish that we could talk about.
I know. Every one of these, by the end of it, it's almost like doing a show. Like you wish you could just get up.
Yeah. I would love to talk about auditions. I would love to talk about Spanx. I'd love to talk about I talked more about the artsy improviser stuff and not about the stuff that is under the purview of my job.
I know, but I think when I think about you, I think it's interesting. I like redemption stories, and I feel like you are a redemption story.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't give up, kids. I know. I hear people in classes who are 21 years old saying, like, oh, I'm so old, I'm getting old, and I want to slap them all in the face.
Yeah, not me. Love it.
You're not, and it's never too late, and life is good.
Wow. You heard it here first and only. We'll be back next week with normal cynicism. Thank you, Cypher Sounds, for accommodating the weird schedule changes this week. And thank you, Keaton,
For
accommodating
those. Thank you, Will. Great job interviewing me. I'm a tough interview, but I think you really cracked my core. I think you cracked my exterior.
Well, thanks for starting the podcast. And I'll see you guys all next episode. Bye. Bye. Stop it.